And we're live. Welcome to the Digital Forensics Now podcast. Today is Friday, August 25th, 2023. My name is Alexis Brignoni, aka Briggs, and I'm accompanied by my co-host, the awesome, amazing, knowledgeable, wise, incredibly opinionated, but in a good way, rockstar and digital forensic examiner extraordinaire, Heather Charpentier. And the podcast, the music is from It's Higher Up by Shane Ivers. You can get it at silversmansound.com. And without further ado, here we are. Hello, Heather.
Hi.
So happy to be here with you.
Happy to be here with you, too.
Thank you for agreeing to do this with me. I'm super, super thankful and appreciative.
Thanks. I'm excited.
So for the folks that don't know us, and let's tell them a little bit about ourselves. So tell me about you, Heather. How do we meet, and what do you do, and what do you like, don't like?
Sure. So I first met Alexis at IASIS. Last year, we instructed at the mobile forensics class at the two-week conference at IASIS. Prior to that, I was harassing him online about ILEAP and ALEAP and artifacts and what they meant and how to run the tools. But we first met in person last year. I currently work at the New York State Police Computer Forensic Laboratory in Albany, New York. I am a computer forensic analyst there, a civilian employee, not a sworn. I do mobile forensics, computer forensics, and I've been there about 8.5 years. I was recently promoted to a supervisor civilian position in the lab.
Nice.
And yeah, so that's what I do there.
Well, I remember Heather not so much. Let me start back in. I knew of Heather looking at the IASIS listserv, and whenever I saw her name on one of the questions, one of the answers, I had to stop and read it. So I knew of Heather before I met her in person, just because of that. She's super active, really good questions, and I'm like, oh, awesome! I get to meet her one day. And then the IASIS thing came about. And we met each other. For those folks that don't know me, I go by Briggs, and I'm one of the developers of a set of tools for digital forensics called LEAPS, ILEAP, ALEAP, and there's a whole bunch of them to do the digital forensics researcher. And I work in law enforcement as well. I am sworn, but on a federal agency. And you can check my LinkedIn if you're curious. And just to make clear for everybody, we're talking here about what we think about the news and the field as researchers and just, personally, right? We do not represent our agencies. We don't speak for them. It's just what we think that as examiners that things are of interest for us. And if they're of interest for us, we hope it's interesting for you, right? So hopefully in the future, we can have interviews with folks in the industry, and we can talk about different things that might be happening. So keep an eye on that. Right. So let's get with the first topic, right? The first topic, unless you've been living under a rock, right, is this one, right? Magnet Forensics buys Griffi, right? And whenever we hear those type of mergers, like, I don't know about you, Heather, but lately it's like merger buying company time, right?
Yeah.
For me, it was when Cellebrite bought like Black Bag, right? I think that's what the start of this kind of whole bunch of buying each other out and becoming like unified kind of started with.
Yes, definitely.
For at least for me, when I heard that, I had some preconceived notions of how that merger would look like. I don't know if you had some, but.
Yeah, I didn't expect it to go the way it went.
Well, and again, we're ignorant. We don't work at Cellebrite, right?
Right.
And I say that because we have expectations. I say, well, Magnet buys Griffi. We say, well, I hope the tool comes into Axiom and becomes this big thing. But sometimes that might not be the case, or it's they're joined in ways that we don't see as examiners, right?
Right.
Like I expected a Cellebrite, say PA, to be able to kind of build or kind of bring in Black Bag products. What's the one for Mac? What's it called?
Macquisition?
No. Well, actually, my acquisition, they just changed the name, right? So they call it, I think it's Digital Collector or something,
right?
Which actually is pretty cool. I use it. But the main tool.
Inspector now.
Inspector now?
Yeah. The other tool is Inspector now.
Yeah. And you know, the main suite for working with Black. Ah, there we go. We got somebody to the rescue here. Thank you so much. Blacklight. Exactly. that's the tool. I thought Blacklight was going to kind of be integrated in PA and did not happen. I mean, it might have been integrated in some other tool that we don't know about, right? But it hasn't. And so we have some expectations on that, but consolidation is the order of the day. I don't know if you remember, I mean, were you an FTK user, Heather, when it was kind of like,
yes. Yeah. I still use FTK sometimes on computer cases.
Yeah. All right. Yep. So like EO1s to process and stuff like that, right?
Yeah. Yes. Yep.
Well, my agency has been an FTK shop for a long, long time. And now personally, me, I've been moving away from it, and not because it's bad. It's because I think they kind of position themselves in the market differently, right? When you think of access data, which I think Xtero bought it, what do you think? Do you think criminal cases or what comes to mind?
So not so much anymore. I mean, it seems more like the e-discovery type of cases, I would say. I still use it on my computer cases. I use it to process. I really like their reporting for categorizing images in CCM cases. But I export out and bring the images back in to use it for reporting. I'll use Magnet for all of the internet history and other artifacts, but FTK, I kind of just use it for the reporting.
No, and I mean, I do as well. And obviously all tools have their use cases, but I think they, like you said, they move now for legal kind of compliance matters. So that's the focus now.
Yeah.
So for us that kind of work on the, not an e-discovery, more the criminal side of things, we might not have the latest things we need within that tool set. Of course, I can be wrong. I want everybody to know, I mean, we're not dissing anybody. We're just kind of opining on things, right?
Right.
And that's what happens with this kind of mergers happen. Even Magnet. Magnet now is also combined with Gray Key, right? Yeah, Gray Shift. But it's not Gray Shift anymore. But the product, the Gray Key product is still maintained. And they've been on a buying binge, right? I got some comments, right? The same thing happened when Encase, they were bought, right?
Right.
So I think as examiners, it'll be worthwhile to, kind of be vocal about what our expectations are when these tools are kind of acquired from each other, because that's what we have to work with, you know?
I'll be curious to see if the two tools stay separate or become a combination, like Axiom and Griffi.
No, yeah, I agree. And I haven't used Griffi that much. When it came out, I want to say 10 years ago, but don't quote me on it. I used it a little bit back in the day. I didn't have the resources I have now in my lab, so I couldn't really run it effectively. It required a lot of resources, but it's good. Now I look at what it does and it's amazing. It's a great buy for them. No doubt. But yeah, how are they going to integrate that? Or if they kept separate, how to bring that reporting in, you know?
Yeah, it's an awesome tool. I use it on almost every case.
So if anybody from Magnet or Griffi is listening, right, keep everybody posted. And if you have something cool to tell us, give us a tip, and we'll be more than happy to put it out there.
Absolutely.
Yeah, no, before we move on, I want to just, kind of say hi to the good folks there. Ron is hanging around, so thanks for being here. And Josh, and good thing Josh is here. We're going to talk about him shortly. And if you know who Josh Hickman is, you will learn shortly. And then Jessica Hyde from Exordia, also hanging around. So thank you for being here. All right. So last thing I want to say about consolidation, right? It's pricing, right? I want to hope that as these things get together, they're cheaper. And usually they're not. And, so that's some of the comments that I put in LinkedIn, right? So I asked the question, hey, what do you guys think, guys and gals, anybody else in between? What do you think about this acquisition process? And for example, I had Stacey Aldrich tell me, in LinkedIn, every time these tools get bought up by a big fish, right, the sales hoop get more complicated, prices increase, and helpful support decreases, and I think that happens a lot of times. So if you're one of these vendors, please look into that. No, don't make it more expensive, please.
We don't want it to be more expensive. And the buying process, I know that my lieutenant would love the buying process to be as simple as possible.
No kidding. The requisition, especially in government, oh my goodness. But let's not go into there. I don't want to get fired.
No.
All right. So moving away from the pure, like, in the news thing, let's talk about a bit of research. So what we have, lady, for research, Heather?
So I'm going to talk about Josh Hickman's recent research on the AirTag detection for Android devices. And I think he's on listening right now. We have a comment that says, oh, should I log off? No, you should stay on, Josh, because your research was awesome. I read his recent blog, and when I read it, I have to do the research to fully understand. I read the blog. It was awesome research, but I need to see it. So I bought an AirTag and hooked it up to my iPhone and put it in my car and drove around and waited for the unwanted alert to come up on my Android device, and it never came. I drove around for days and never got the unwanted tracker alert on my Android. And if people listening don't know what I'm talking about, Google recently provided support for alerts to come to your Android phone if there's an AirTag that is traveling with you. And the way it works is you'll automatically get an alert if there's an unknown tracker that's separated from its owner and traveling with your Android device. So I put it in my car and it's traveling with my Android device and I'm not getting the unknown tracker alert.
Super stealthy AirTag.
Yeah. So I finally got the alert today. And I figured out why it took days to get the alert. I had the iPhone that I paired the AirTag with in my bag. In the back seat. Of course, I'm not going to get the alert.
It's not following you, actually. It's following the phone it's paired with.
Yeah, it's in the car. So this morning I took the bag out and I didn't even realize the phone was in the bag. And when I took the bag out, I drove 45 minutes today. And the Android device finally detected that I had an unknown tracker in the vehicle. And my phone alerted me that I had an unknown tracker. So I finally got it to work.
Don't feel bad. I connected this hard drive to a computer and I'm like, okay, it's not working. And I'm going to my computer management, looking at the drives. Why can I see this drive? For everybody, if you connect a drive to your write blocker, make sure the write blocker is also connected to the USB drive or the computer, or it's not going to work. at a minimum, yeah. Make sure they're hooked up. So it happens to the best of us. So don't feel bad.
So I'm going to pop up some pictures. Josh's blog on this was awesome, but, here is my AirTag that I set up on the iPhone, and I called it Stalker, rightfully so. So I was stalking myself.
And Heather showed me this picture when she did it, right? And so folks that are listening, it's called Stalker, right? And the little point that's saying where the AirTag is has like two eyes, like looking sideways, you know, like really creepy looking eyes. And like those eyes got me. So it's totally appropriate, the little emoji there for the Stalker icon.
And then let's see. So today, when I finally got the notification, I got the map of where I had been traveling today. Let's see if I can get the right picture up. But the map came up. I got the unknown tracker alert, and the map where I had traveled today came up and alerted me that there was a tracker with me. It was in my vehicle. And I can play a sound to locate the unknown tracker, and you can take the steps to detect that tracker.
Yeah, and it's interesting because the map that Heather's showing, it has the different kind of places, like little lines, that's how it's moving with you. And then the little big, like alert, that's like orange, right? Orange kind of triangle telling right. you, hey, this thing is following you. You want to be aware of this.
Yeah. So something I thought was not working at all absolutely works. So my goal was, prior to having this podcast tonight, was to also extract the data from the phone and take a look at the databases. But that didn't work in time because I got tracked today. But Josh's blog lays out the databases and the types of data that you can extract from the Android device very well. There's a database that tracks the devices, information about the tracker, the Bluetooth MAC addresses, GPS coordinates, and Aleap actually supports the parsing of these artifacts from the Android device.
Yay. And I want to make a quick point here. Like Josh is telling us that it still sees the tags, right? So even if it's being not alerting you because the parent device is with it, it's still going to log that it's there, even if it doesn't alert you. So that's a cool thing to know, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So while I was driving around waiting for the tracker alert, I could go in and I could manually scan for the tag, and it was showing me that the tag was there. And I'm like, why is this not popping up that there's an unknown tracker? And it does. It sees all the tags around you, but it's not going to alert you that there's an unknown tracker following you, because, I mean, if it did that, it would show you everybody that had an AirTag near you. So yeah.
That could be a little bit overwhelming.
Yeah.
Well, let me show the folks here and describe verbally for those listening in the audio podcast. How does the artifacts in Aleap work? And again, Aleap is open source. It's a free tool that myself and a whole bunch of other people, including Kevin that's in the chat and some other good folks, we do for triaging on the community. I know it's a little bit small, but what you see here is like a report with a timestamp and the last updated timestamp when that AirTag was scanned, the MAC address, and the state, and the latitude and longitude, obviously, because that's how it tracks where is it, and you can put it on the map. So, and this is interesting because if something is tracking you, even if you don't, like Josh was saying, even if the parent device is with it, but it's traveling with you, right, you're going to have some data there. And if you look at the phone, you have another set of data points to put that device in context where it was, right? And there's a lot of case uses for this data beyond just saying, hey, an AirTag is around me, right? Here, there's the alert report. So again, MAC address, when it was alerted, if the alert was sent to the device or not, if passive scanning is on or off, that's an option too. And lastly, when the last scan happened, and all that is kept. And again, Josh is awesome. So thank you so much for doing that research, which allowed me to be able to do the artifacts. It's a team effort all around.
I had to ask Alexis if it was supported in Aleap already, and it is. And the research was done 13 days ago, so I had to ask him if he actually ever sleeps or not, because that was really quick. But it is, so I can't wait to extract the phone, get the data, and look at my own data in Aleap.
No, and Josh was kind enough to give me some data. Like Ronan was saying, right? And Heather, it's great that you did some those steps to validate, because, you know, I totally trust in what Josh said, but you have to go in, do it yourself, validate those findings, because maybe myself or Josh missed something, right? And when somebody else goes in and looks at it, we all get better. So that's super, super important.
Right.
Paul is saying that in Android, it's a really reliable location data on Android. And that's really important. A whole new data set. And if you're not aware of it, you're not going to get it. So that's what we're making you aware. You have no excuse now. All right. So if you're all interested in reading Josh's blog, you can go to binaryhig.blog and you can go there. We're going to put the links, whatever we talk about here, we're going to put links in the show notes, both in YouTube and in the podcast. So you can follow those later, right? All righty. So the next topic, it's the Forecast Awards that happened recently, right? Were you able to watch them live, Heather? Or
I did not watch them live this year, unfortunately. Yeah. I've been seeing all of the winners on all of the different social media sites.
I think Lee is our, may be around, I think. But we were trying to find like a page that had them all listed, like, and yeah. We couldn't find it. So we're going to talk about some of the winners, not all of them, because we couldn't find like a full on list.
Yeah, I couldn't find a list anywhere.
Yeah, our Google foo failed. open source researching failed us. So
that's the end of Google.
So we want to talk about a few of them. The first thing I want to say is, like, you know, there's, how can I say this? I said it in other places, like, I'm not a big fan of popular vote type of awards, because they measure popularity, not, they don't always measure how good some or how bad something is, right? But that being said, they're still important because they create awareness, right? And one of the things of awareness that they created this year is the really vibrant digital forensics community in Brazil, right? And a whole bunch when you're competing for being a winner in a
nominees.
Nominees, see, you're awesome. Yes, I'm thinking of the word in Spanish. That's not gonna help. Yeah, a lot of the nominees were from Brazil, right? A really, really active community. I forgot his name, but Avila, from Avila Forensics. This guy is, we have some interactions, emails back and forth. Really smart guy. His tooling is pretty legit. So I'm really happy that he won the forensic tooling award there. He was competing against my tooling, and I'm happy that he won. Totally well deserved. Wow. Yeah, nice. So really good thing. Celebrite, right? How did Celebrite do this year, Heather?
They won a lot of awards this year. They won a lot of awards. It was like five or six, right?
Yeah, let me see here. I have a list here. I have here 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah, five of them. Like last year and the year before. Mm-hmm. Really, well, and this is my opinion, right? I think it's really due to the good job of the folks there, but also the good job of the folks that let us know the good job they do, right? Like Ronan that's here, Paul, especially Heather Mahalik, they make sure that all this good stuff that Celebrite is doing gets really known through the podcast and stuff. So it makes sense, right? They got the team of the year, blog of the year, capture the flag of the year, commercial tool of the year, and social media influencer, which was Heather as well. So congrats to them.
Yeah, absolutely. Congratulations.
Yeah. And then I want to also mention folks, the community won for the book award part, which is the Hitchhiker's Guide to Defer. And Andrew Rathborn kind of led that effort with a whole bunch of authors, with Kevin Pagano also spoiled the group of the authors. So congrats to them. Yeah, it's a free book. If you're not aware of it, just kind of Google Hitchhiker's Guide to Defer, D-F-I-R. And you will be able to download that book, a whole bunch of topics. It's a free book done by the community. And if you want to add to it, it's open for addition. So the book will be ever evolving. So I think
you might want to check that out. It's a free book, but I believe part of the donation goes to NCMEC. So if you can donate toward the book, that's a good cause to donate toward.
Oh, absolutely. And for folks that don't know what it is, NCMEC is the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. And they have an incredible mission. They work with law enforcement to prevent child exploitation. And also, and when it happens, be able to bring those perpetrators to justice by keeping a list of, you know, these contraband images and how we can go about and, you know, do investigations and the sort, training capabilities, everything. So NCMEC, great cost to support. So no doubt. All right, let's check here. Like Jessica's saying, the guide is awesome. So please do check it out. All right. All right. So what do we have next, Heather?
Next is input, output, and syslog. And I know Jessica Hyde is here. And this is her tool from Hexordia. and I am going to talk about it. I'm actually going to hook it up so that you can see it running live. So give me 1 second to do that. Let's see here.
I want to say that the tooling they got presented like a week ago, maybe, or even less, at Black Hat. So if you haven't been aware of this tooling, I'm glad that you're here. So you are. It's pretty awesome. It's pretty awesome. I know that Jessica is working with her team and look at, she just said it right now, mind meld, with her team to bring newer capabilities to it. It's pretty awesome.
I am just going to start it on my iPhone 11 Pro, and then I will explain. And then, Jessica, if you have anything to add, I am open to you adding. Absolutely. So this is Jessica Hyde's tool, and Jessica Hyde and her team's tool that acquires and parses live system logs from iOS devices. What she's doing is, it's not running live. What did I bring up? I brought up the wrong thing, didn't I?
It's all good.
I've got my wrong screen up. There we go. So she's allowing you to obtain real-time data from iOS devices, and you just have to establish trust or have a pairing record for the iOS device. The data, as you can see, is coming at a very high rate of speed. So what Jessica and her team have done, they have a separate tab here where they are actually parsing out relevant artifacts from that live log.
And let me describe quickly for the folks that are listening. What we're showing here is an application is open. That application, as Heather described, is connected to the device. And then quickly on the screen, you see this kind of log entries flying through the screen, right? Which really quick, right? And the application has different tabs, like Heather's saying, and she's kind of going through them one by one. Now we're showing all the text going on the screen, and now she can explain the different tabs within the application that Hexordia has put in for the public to use.
So in the artifacts that she's parsing out, in the relevant artifacts, there are different things that you can see here. This one actually is showing like some lock statuses, that the device was locked with a passcode, that the lock status has changed, that I think there's some orientations in here. I had one yesterday where I saw that the device was unlocked with Face ID. There's different BSS IDs. There's MAC addresses that I saw in the parsed artifacts. There's been location data, latitudes and longitudes in the parsed artifacts. I believe there's a ton more artifacts that they're going to be adding to the artifacts that they're going to be showing as relevant data. You can see here the locked status just came up as changed again. There's historical artifacts being parsed out.
That's what I really care about, that historical stuff.
It's just awesome, the stuff that's coming out of this tool.
Paul's saying.
Skip to over on the right-hand side, you also have your device information that comes up from the device. So it's my iPhone running 16.3.1.
16.3.1?
Yep. Yeah, so newer device, iPhone 11 Pro, and it's running 16.3.1. And all I had to do was establish trust with the computer, and I'm getting all of this data.
Yeah, I know. And I make that point, like we're not talking about like an iPhone, you know, 9, right? OS 9. No, we're talking about the latest and the greatest.
The latest. free tool, Jessica's saying, I did skip that. This is a free tool, and it's also, this is working on devices that may or may not be supported by your forensic tools for extraction right now, right? So there's devices in your lab or devices in your office that are not supported for a full file system or an extraction right now, and you can plug them in if they're unlocked and trust or have a pairing record and get this data while you're waiting for them to be supported by tools for extraction. The logs can be exported here with, they can be exported raw, they can be exported in a CSV format. And you also can export the findings from the parsed artifacts here on the syslog analysis screen.
No, and Geraldine was saying, she shared with everybody, like she was running on a 13 Pro, running 16.6, right?
Also the very newest.
Oh yeah. So if you have a phone you're having some issues with, you need to get data out. You also have that ability. I'm understating the importance that this tool the capability that this tool brings, right?
That's absolutely awesome.
I agree with some of the comments, right? Amazing tool. So do check it out and see how can you make it part of your workflow, especially with newer devices. Super, super useful.
Yeah, it's absolutely awesome.
Yeah, I'm glad they showed it at Black Hat. It makes absolute sense. Super, super cool. And if you're interested in you know how to get it, go to thehexordia.com. And you can find, go to the blog section and you will see an article about it, how to get it. Again, we're going to put those links in the description. So folks that are listening can also benefit from getting those tools. Super cool. No, and thanks Heather for testing that out and kind of showing us live how it works. It's pretty legit.
I will say too, if anybody has not gone over to the Cyber5W or Hexordia website to take training, Jessica's trainings are awesome. Whether you have been in forensics for a really long time or you're a beginner, the trainings are amazing. Whether it's brand new to you or it's a refresher course, awesome trainings. I know everybody in my office agrees with that.
No, absolutely. And to folks, make folks understand, I mean, we're just giving our opinions. We are not getting paid by anybody.
but those trainings are awesome.
They're good. I've been blessed to also taking them and I benefit greatly from them. So highly recommend it.
And a lot of them are free.
Yes. And also some of them are coming out in Spanish. So if you're a native Spanish speaker like myself, you can go check the Spanish versions as well and use it for your team and help them develop.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So the next topic we're gonna talk about is a little bit how can I say this? A little bit sensitive, and so I have to tread lightly on this one. So the question is, do we need access to source code to ensure fairness, like source code in regards to the programs that we use to do extraction or even parsing of our artifacts to ensure fairness in legal proceedings, right? And obviously we're not lawyers, so we're gonna just try to approach this from the technical side, not so much from the legal side. And the thing that kind of put this into perspective for today, I'm going to share here an article that came out in, there we go, in TechCrunch, where supposedly, this is a reporting, again, I don't know, I wasn't there, supposedly Celebrite is asking users to keep quiet in regards to what the capabilities of the tools are, right? And obviously we're not going to go into discussing this part because, you know, that's not really technical from our side point of view, but what I want to bring in regards to this is that as part of the conversations that we see in the press or everywhere else about this, something that's not mentioned is that the transparency issue versus the loss of capability issue, right? And we usually think, well, if somebody's getting prosecuted, they need to know everything about how that came about to be so they can place a defense, even if it means losing the capability. And something that gets missed is that, well, that capability, and I say losing the capability because the folks that make the devices, the iPhones, the Androids, if they figure out how folks, how examiners are getting that data out for analysis, they might patch that ability, that capability, right? Well, that capability being lost also means exonerations could be missed or could be lost, right? The person that's saying, hey, I did not commit the crime. I was 10,000 miles away with my phone and my phone can prove it. And then you cannot get that data out to prove it, that might be an issue, right? Exonerations could be missed. So it's not only transparency in the sense of knowing how to prosecute somebody, but having the access to make sure that the innocent don't get falsely accused, right? Or to prove when somebody has lied and accused you of something you haven't done, right? And I said I was going to talk about the technical part, and that's not technical, right? But let me ask you, Heather, like, you get tooling, do you just put it on your devices and use it and say, hey, this is what it came out and just that? I mean, do you just take it at their word just because they said they do X? You believe they do X?
Absolutely not. Testing right, and validation, always.
Yep. And I think that's the technical part that's always missing from this conversation, right? If I gave you, Heather, like, let's say like 5 million lines of code of how my tooling work and say, hey, this is what my tool does that provide you any value?
No.
Yeah, most likely not. And you say, well, I don't know coding, even if you did, right?
Right.
And I'm going to get on a soapbox here. Like, systems, when they're complex enough, right, you can even look at them like how they're built, right, giving you the source codes of how it is. And if they're so complex, you're not going to get any value by looking line by line at that complexity. You have to test. You have to say, okay, the thing says it does one thing. Let's see if it does it or not, right? Complex systems require that testing. And that's where black box testing comes in. And I don't think this is part of the conversation enough. And we were talking before the show, you know, kind of an example of, hey, I have this sausage making box. I don't know what's in it, but it says it does sausages. So if I put ground beef on one end, sausages come out the other one, right? And that's the expectation, right? Make some sausages out of the ground beef. But what if I put the ground beef and some pineapples come out? Well, that's a problem, right? The tool is not doing what it's supposed to be doing, right? It's not validated. And that's how it is, either complexity or just trying to retain the capability, not lose the capability. And I believe that's a worthwhile thing because the proof is not from looking at what's inside the box, but what the actual output of it is. That's where the rubber meets the road, right? You want to test the UI, you want to test the reporting capabilities, you want to test the parsing. Take known data, put it into the sausage machine, and make sure sausages come out. And Josh is telling us, you know, some of these, I think it's ISO 17025, I think. Correct me if I'm wrong, Josh, but you know, it calls for performance verification, right? That the thing does the action that it says it does. And I believe that, you know, it's my opinion as a technologist, a researcher, the actual working of the thing is more important than the individual parts of the thing. And if we put that into context, some of these issues in regards to keeping stuff, that capability, it's not secret because we're doing something illegal. It's just the capability to preserve the capability for the benefit of everybody, from those that are being accused, independent if they're guilty or not, right? That's the whole process. And I think it should be preserved. Hopefully I don't get in trouble saying this. What do you think? Do you think they'll fire me?
You're fired.
Yeah, right. No, but that's important. And as you come across these type of discussions, you know, in your work or whatever, black box texting, right? Like the testing and validation is what does it. Actually, that reminds me, I have it right here. If you're interested in this topic of validation, let me share with you and folks that are watching a little piece of an article. Full disclosure, I am part of the authors of this document. It's called 6 Steps to Successful Mobile Validation. A whole bunch of really cool people: Heather Mahalik, John Baer, Steven Coates, Mike Dickinson, Mattia Epifani. I love them. Jessica Hyde, that's here. Scott Koning, also awesome. Luke Paul, which is also here. A whole bunch of people. I don't know how they allowed me to write with them. But we have some thoughts on how do we do that validation, right? That you can get that at the SANS website. So you can register there and then download 6 Steps for Successful Mobile Validation. These steps apply not only to mobile. You can use it for any type of forensic endeavor, digital forensic endeavor you're in. And actually, I have two comments here. The first is Jessica says that the Forecast Awards winning paper from last year. So that's correct.
Very nice.
So it's pretty good. And Kevin is telling us, you know, trust but verify. And that's always right. You can't just take it at face value. And again, the main point I'm making is the discussion about transparency, it's dwarfed by the need for preserving capability and validation, black box testing and validation, which is the thing that actually assures you transparency, because the thing is working as it's supposed to be working, right? I want to show one more comment here. tools and artifacts are not always developed for the purpose they are used for, right? So we need to test for our purposes or use cases by using known data. Super important. If it works with the data that's known, I can be pretty confident that it works with data that's unknown to me, right? Awesomeness. Like I said, you can go to sans.org. And again, the link for the article, we'll put it in the notes so you can benefit from it. All right, Heather. So what do we have next?
Next, we have targeted extractions. And I think I'm going to turn this into like targeted extractions and targeted analysis. So I've seen a lot of articles and a lot of posts about targeted extractions and targeted analysis lately. I guess how it's kind of going to be like the future, where we're going in extractions and looking to just extract specific data from phones. Like we only want text messages, or we're only going in for calls, or very specific data that we're extracting. It could be that we're doing that for time purposes or based on the parameters of a search warrant. And then also specifically with analysis as well, again, for time purposes or for the parameters of a search warrant. And I think I've seen it a lot more, and I kind of just wanted to talk a little bit about the pros and cons of that. I can see that there's pros to targeted extractions and targeted analysis for time purposes. Absolutely. I personally see a lot of cons when it comes to targeted extractions and analysis, specifically with analysis. If you're going in, extractions, I mean, you're going in for text messages. We're looking for SMS only. You're only extracting the SMS. The user deleted all the SMS. They only reside in the biome now. You've gone in to extract the SMS. They're gone. You didn't get the biome, and you now have missed all of the evidence. So that would be my one example. Analysis as well. The time constraints. An example of a con for the time constraints in analysis. You're looking only specifically date and time. Pick images come to mind with date and time. A lot of the images that I see in extractions don't have dates and times parsed with them. But we know if we go in and we look in the file system and we look at other artifacts surrounding images, there are dates and times that are able to be located for the images or for videos. And I don't know. I just see a lot of problems with the targeted extractions and the targeted analysis.
And it's tough, right? Because so some of those limits, you know, either we put it ourselves or somebody puts it on us, right? So Geraldine was saying in the comments that some of the search warrants, right? They say, well, they're limited in scope. Right. We need to get this, right? Mm-hmm. And that's tough because the tool, like you're saying, might say, well, you pull the text, but what if they're in the biomes? I mean, can we pull all the biomes out? And then after that, do initial parsing to pull out the actual messages that might be recovered from them. Like there's a lot of nuance because not everything is, like you're saying, aggregated in one place.
Right.
Right. Or like Jessica was saying, does it limit the ability to find exculpatory information, right? If you're saying only pull these and those don't have the thing that shows that you're innocent, then what, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. With the images, a specific example I think of, or images and videos anyway, are Snapchat. So the encrypted gallery, right? So Cellebrite actually decrypts the encrypted gallery photos and videos for that. And they pull the decrypted version out, and it's wonderful, but the decrypted version doesn't have the date and timestamp. But the encrypted version does over in the file system. So if you're only looking at the parsed data, you don't see the date and timestamp. So if you go in and you filter by date and timestamp, you're going to miss that unless you go back and look at that original source file that it was decrypted from. So you would miss all of that data from Snapchat. And I mean, I don't know about other people's cases, but Snapchat's huge for me. So,
No. Absolutely. And look, there's some great comments here. So I'm going to share a few of them. So
yeah, absolutely.
It's all like Paul's saying, you also have one chance to extract the data, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's so many scenarios where, you know, you have access to the device for a really limited amount of time. What mm-hmm. do you do, right? You cannot get everything. So
right.
It's all case dependent. Like, obviously in forensics, and everybody here is going to say it with me, say the words, everything in forensic, what? It depends. Yeah, and that's the rule, right? Well, no, that's a good point, like Paul's bringing, right? Also with some of this stuff in the not criminal cases, but in the legal compliance, you know, this e-discovery stuff, right? You might be only required to get emails and that's it, right? So, I mean, there's some use to it. But at least for us that work in the criminal side of things,
yeah.
we kind of gravitate to having more rather than less, right?
Right.
I'd rather have more and then discard, I mean, have stuff that I don't need than stuff that I need, then don't have it, right?
Absolutely. I think that if we're moving toward the targeted extractions, it just, I don't know, it scares me a little bit that we're definitely going to be missing things.
Yeah, and it's dicey, and it requires the examiner, mm-hmm. I think, to have a really good understanding, like the example I was making, right? Only text messages, the examiner needs to know to bring out the biomes. And right. for the folks that don't know what the biome is kind of the latest replacement for Knowledge C in iOS devices, iPhones and iPads, and some of the app intents. And again, you're not familiar with these terms, I'm putting them out there. You can do some Googling on it and follow up some great research by a whole bunch of good stuff, like good people like Geraldine Bly, Chris Vance, and others, that those app intents can keep those content of those messages there for whatever, 30 days or whatever it is, even after the deletion from the data source, from the database, right? So you need to be involved, right? In if you're gonna do this and do some target extraction, you need to know what you're doing, right? I have another comment here from Josh.
Sorry, no, I hit it too.
Thank you.
That one needed to go up.
No, we're on the same page. The examiner needs to be involved in indicating the courts, right? Because
yes.
if the judge is saying only text messages, the judge needs to understand that the biome might be part of that. Because there's text messages there, right? And this is just one example. Same thing with your example of Snapchat. We need the decrypted one, but we need the encrypted one too for these reasons. And make sure that your legal authority covers you for that, right? Because if not, you're going to be in a world of hurt. Yeah. And, you know, I think Jessica kind of thinks with us from the criminal side of things.
Yeah.
I say criminal in the sense of folks that work within the criminal legal system, right? Not the civil one. You know, we want comprehensive extractions, and then when we analyze, we can limit. And that depends on your jurisdiction, right? Some courts will allow you to do that. Say, okay, bring everything out and then put a filter for the things that you can see, or you put a filter, and then the agents, that I say agents, but whoever the reviewer is later, will have that filter in between, right? But some right. jurisdictions might not. The judge might filter it for you. Say, no, only this that you can only pull out. So you gotta make sure that there's some good, like Josh saying, education of your prosecutors, lawyers, stakeholders, whoever it is that's involved in getting that authorization.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I think that, I mean, we cover a lot, so we're almost to the end. And people that know me, right, they know that if they follow my stuff, there has to be a meme in there somewhere. So I'm going to share with the folks like the meme that was most popular of the ones that I put out recently, because they reflect our experience, right? So actually, let me show you here. So the meme time for this episode, let me see if I can find it here. It's in right here. Nope, not here. Yeah, here it is. There we go. All right, for the folks that are listening, it says, when they tell you digital forensics, it's a lot of Googling things, right? Like these forensic guys or gals, they only do is Googling. So there's this guy with a microphone saying, you insulted my entire field of knowledge. But yes, it's absolutely true. We were talking a few days ago. I was telling Heather that I was looking for some solution to something, and I'm Googling. And I found the answer, and the answer was a blog post that I wrote myself 3 years ago. And I mean, that's part of our experience. We have to Google a lot of things, and we appreciate all the community. Again, Josh being one of them that we can highlight because we talk about his stuff today, that they put a blog post out. And if you're listening and you do research, please share with the community. You don't have to do new discoveries. Even if it's something that's kind of known, but your perspective is important. Your perspective can help somebody that's trying to build a case, how to present that data at court or to an audience, and your perspective might help them. Even if the artifact is well known, your perspective isn't. So share it, right? Make a blog, make a podcast like we just started today, and make sure you share what you know and what you're learning, and we're all going to benefit from it.
Yeah, absolutely. The Googling is great. So anytime somebody new starts with us, I tell them you're going to have to Google everything. And when you Google something in forensics, just make sure whatever you're Googling, put the word forensics after it. And when you do that, it's usually either Josh's blog or Alexis, it's your stuff, or it's Jessica's stuff, or it always ends up being your blogs are up at the top, and they end up getting some really good hits back from Google. So thank you.
No, and as folks share, they will also be coming to the top too. Like the more the merrier, right? Josh is saying that this applies to incident response as well, right? So we're focused on digital forensics, but if you're doing incident response or any other field, totally applicable, and put your stuff out there, right?
Yeah.
Let's see here. Jessica makes a comment. Submit them for peer review at DFIR Review. And for those folks that don't know, we'll put that in the link in the notes as well. There's this website where you can send your research in, and folks from universities and mentors and folks like that are really knowledgeable in the area will review your research and validate it and put it out there for you. And this is great because if I go to court, testify on an artifact, I can say, yeah, this works and it's been validated, peer review validated, right? Or for yourself, if you're trying to establish your expertise as a expert in digital forensics, have you been peer reviewed? The answer is yes, if you submitted your research to the DFIR review. So we're going to put the link there so everybody can benefit from it. We have a question here. What are the challenges facing digital forensics? Is it possible to work remotely in this area? And I'm fascinated by IoT forensics. Those are great questions. And actually, I mean, we don't have the show. We got like, what, 3 or 4 minutes, so we're not going to cover it. But what do you think? Next episode or future episode, cover some of this?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'll say one thing, though, about is it possible to work remotely quickly, though? I mean, you can. It probably just depends on what agency you choose, right? I mean, certain agencies, definitely. I mean, there's tons of private sector jobs in digital forensics. You can work remotely. I would say definitely that there's the opportunity. And then we can discuss the challenges in digital forensics on the next episode.
Absolutely.
Right? Our top topic.
Well, let's look forward to that. All right. So I think, one last thing, right? Let me kind of get this out of the screen here. So one last thing I want to show everybody. So for now, we're going to be using this email, abrignoni@duck.com. If you have comments, things you want to hear us talk about, research that you come across, all that, send us an email. In the future, we're still discussing how we're going to do this. If we need a domain name, we don't know. We're still thinking, but we're more than happy to hear your thoughts and kind of, you know, act on them. Hopefully some interviews in the future. So, it was great.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Heather. You're so awesome for coming on. You're so kind. And let me see. We have any more comments here? Yeah. So thank you, everybody. Thank you for being here. Thank you, Paul, for waiting for the next one. There'll be more.
Thank you.
and with that, we're going to say good night, and we'll leave it for next time.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night. Have a good night.